Serving the octopus, according to Ken Thomas. Go ahead and grab a line. We'll talk about the guy behind JFK and UFO, the octopus and secrets and suppressed too. If you ever want to hear a great version of Gotta Serve Somebody, listen to the Mavis Staples version of the Staples Singers. Man, she does that song so beautifully. And we'll get back to your calls for Ken Thomas about the real conspiracy behind the conspiracy of the JFK assassination and more on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. So heading into our last hour, we'll start taking questions for Ken Thomas, who is the man behind so many of the books that attempt to find the men behind so much of history. How about that, Ken?
Yeah, that's good.
First time caller line. Jim is in Santa Monica on Coast to Coast for Ken Thomas. Go ahead, Jim.
Hi, you guys.
Hey.
I'm a researcher, too, and I think I know who just killed Marilyn Monroe was Fred Lee Christman, because Kennedy told Marilyn about UFOs, and the way Kennedy was involved is the Cuban Missile Crisis. The Cold War was, like, fabricated between the big powerful countries. The Cuban, and we had a treaty, we're supposed to share information. The Cuban Missile Crisis, after Eisenhower left, said, we want that down craft, and Kennedy was going back and forth with the CIA, saying, and that's what almost started the firing of the nuclear missiles. And Kennedy called the CIA and said, Russia's going to nuke us, and we're going to nuke them. Do you got a down craft? They said no, and they kept going back and forth until he finally said they gave him the UFO. They said they're going to give it to him. They left, and then I think even there was a party where Khrushchev was at about a month later. He had the biggest smile, like some big party. Political party, and he was smiling. He had the biggest smile on the face, like he got the down craft.
All right, let's get Ken Thomas on any of that. Ken,
was there a question in there?
No, but what do you think? He's the things he's tying together there.
Okay, let me take Marilyn Monroe. There is it's a document known as the Spiriglio document that is a transcript of pillow talk between Marilyn and RFK, that says that she's telling RFK that his brother took her to see the, quote, things from outer space at a desert base. And this memo, the day after this memo is the day that Marilyn died. I was once on a television show called Conspiracy Zone, where they were tapping me as an expert on Marilyn Monroe for some reason, because I'm the all-purpose conspiracy expert. And they had a guy on there saying that Marilyn's death had to do with the mob, and they had a woman, an actress on there, saying that Marilyn had committed suicide. And I had come in with this idea that it had to do with Area 51 and the things from outer space in the Spiriglio document. Probably the wildest theory on the show, but I was the only person who brought any documentation.
you've got at least a memo, if nothing else.
That's right.
Manny is in Lake Worth, Florida, on Coast to Coast for Ken Thomas. Manny?
Yes, hello, Ken. Hello, Ian. Thank you for having this conversation tonight. It's getting us thinking here and critically
Good.
Thinking, which is lacking a little too much in the American society today. I'm calling because I lost my uncle, Thomas Joseph Scroy, on September 11th. He was in the North Tower of the World Trade Center, and for years I believed what the government told us through their conspiracy theory, until I began to research on my own, and I started listening to other 9/11 family members that wanted answers to myriad questions that remain unanswered by our government. And I began to talk with the first responders, the rescue workers, military officers, even scientists. I've even spoken to people that have the actual dust, basically the evidence that where we found highly engineered military-grade explosives within the dust of the World Trade Center. So. Just for the past few years, I've been pretty active. There's a group, nyccan.org, that has a campaign going on right now. It's
Manny, I know there's a question in here for the guest, yeah, so I just want to remember that's why you're here. So go ahead.
I know it's about rememberbuilding7.org. That's the website.
Okay.
This TV ad is focused strictly on Building 7. Now our group has met with New York City Council members. I've actually spoken with a number of them. Uh-huh. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to get awareness built up in hearings in the New York City Council. I'm asking, how do we allow for people to feel safe to discuss the facts of the case? You know, people say
okay.
to me, oh, you're...
Let's get the response here, because we got a lot of people that want to get on here, Manny. So go ahead. Ken, okay. That's his question.
Okay, let me answer it this way. With a couple of other researchers, we went to the there's a hotel across from where the plane crashed into the Pentagon, and we went to the hotel and we spoke to every one of the workers. We even had a bilingual researcher talking to the people that only spoke Spanish, and every one of them saw a plane crash into the Pentagon. But you will find a large segment of the 9/11 researchers saying that didn't happen at all. And of course, the hotel also had security. Security camera footage that each one of these people told us was confiscated by the FBI at the time it happened. So really the only footage there is of the plane crashing into the Pentagon are a series of stills that were taken at the Citgo station that was also there. So the FBI has this footage and it could release it at any time and totally get rid of this wilder element of the 9/11 movement that says there was no plane that crashed into the Pentagon. But it doesn't. So the whole point of that story is that the 9/11 movement has some legitimate questions, but it also has some disinformation kind of going along with it. So you need to be very careful about that.
Fred Crisman lives. So even, but I let's speak to Manny's point. Now, I am not one who, I mean, I believe the planes hit the tower, and I believe the towers, and I believe that there's ample evidence to explain how these towers came down just based on that alone. But that having been said, his question was, is there a way to address Building 7, the collapse of Building 7, is there a way to make it safer, he asks, for people to come forward to tell what they know in order to uncover what he says is the missing truth?
To make it safe, I mean, there's been an official 9/11 commission, right?
Right.
But come forward to tell whom?
Well, he's saying for people whose voices were not heard, who have an alternative version of 9/11.
Yeah. Well, you see, that's the world I live in. I hear those alternative versions all the time. You know, there's the web, there's the research community, there's the all kinds of alternative communities out there now that you can connect up to. Whether, you know, what do you say about making it safer, in what regard?
I don't know. That was his point. But you know what? Yeah. Here's one thing I have to say. Check me on this if I'm sounding bitter or lopsided. Is I think that some of this, I guess I'm confused by the people who seek the government, the approval of the government that they eschew. That they're in one breath they talk about it being a government conspiracy, and the next breath they're trying to get that government to validate their theory, and I don't get that.
That's a very good point. That's a very good point. You know, in terms of the official government story about the Kennedy assassination, you know, that's changed, right? I mean, there was the Warren Commission, but after the committees in the 70s on assassination, the conclusion was that it was a conspiracy.
Of some sort, which is yet to be determined.
Involving a mob or something, but...
Right, and leaving open the possibility that there was truth to it somewhere, which is pretty much what they said.
Yeah.
Right. But I just think...
All over the place.
I just think, why are we getting... If we don't believe in government's ability to get to the truth, or that they've released the truth so far, why are we lining up more government people to try to do what we also believe in the end they won't do? It almost seems like an exercise in futility, but that's just me. Right. West of the Rockies, Jeff is in Mendocino, California, on Coast to Coast for Ken Thomas of JFK and UFO and so much more.
Hi, Ian and Ken. Great show. I was asleep, and Coast woke me up because this show is so compelling.
Good.
I wanted to say, I'm listening on KKOH, home of Ross Mitchell out of Reno, and I want to wish all the folks there well after the horrible fire they just had.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. Yeah, good old Ross Mitchell. Love him.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Where would Coast be without Ross Mitchell?
Exactly. We would be in the soprano section or the tenors, not nearly in the bass section like we are with Ross.
Anything compared to Russ is the soprano section.
You got that exactly right. Well phrased.
Well, now, the first caller, great movie script from Santa Monica, and I think you were referring to the Ritz-Carlton on your previous discussion. But don't kill me just because I mentioned that. Anyway, my question goes to an ongoing story about an office agent of Obama having dropped a document containing the itinerary of the president on his current tour, along with phone numbers of high-level government officials. Now, to take this out of nobody knocking on anyone's doors used to happen to Art during prediction shows, let's put it in the generic. And let me ask, if somebody were to drop something like that in the gutter and something nefarious happened to somebody as a result of that, would it be the seeds of conspiracy theory that it was intentional, it was a preconceived drop, or do accidents like that that may lead to something nefarious become the elements of exactly what you're discussing tonight? And also, why isn't Bobby Kennedy looked into as much as JFK? And I'll leave it there. Thank you for the show, guys.
Yep.
Okay, thanks. All right.
Let's start with the RFK thing first. Why is JFK get all the oxygen?
RFK was just really kind of like a follow-up to the JFK assassination. Although, you know, you will find people that will argue that this isn't true at all, that JFK was not going to de-escalate in Vietnam, that he was a Cold War like everybody else. You can't make that argument with RFK. I mean, he is very publicly coming out against the Vietnam War. And it certainly should be looked into. And it is, you know, this group I mentioned before, the Coalition on Political Assassinations. It has the conference every year in Dallas, but it also has conferences at in L.A. and actually at the Ambassador when it was still a hotel. It also has the conferences in Memphis. Martin Luther King is another assassination. All of those assassinations, there are researchers into every one of them.
Right.
The mother of them all is the JFK assassination, because this is, you know, this is where they finally showed their hand in America, where they finally said, this is the way we're going to play the game. And everything is kind of in the wake of that.
Well, why? I mean, we have obviously somebody who had killed Lenin, and you have somebody that attempted to kill Ronald Reagan. And there are all these weird little, you know, coincidences, obviously, around the guy who tried to kill Ronald Reagan. But why do you think, by and large, assassinations stopped in this country? I mean, for a while there, I mean, for the 60s, it's defined by a series of assassinations.
Well, yeah. Almost every presidential election, for instance, after Kennedy, was settled by a bullet one way or another.
Well, I guess you're right. I mean, you've got the attempted assassination of George Wallace and then Gerald Ford. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, so, I don't know. I'm just trying to think. I mean, there are public figures like that. I mean, for both a sitting senator, a sitting president, the leading civil rights leader to all go down within a few years of each other, and then roughly after that, it just stops.
Well, for one thing, you get a lot of presidents and public figures that are not those things. They're not reforming presidents or civil rights leaders. We don't have people like that so much anymore. People got the message.
Well, that's what I guess I'm getting at is, the reformers go. The people who are doing a sincere reform, you're saying, they don't put themselves in the crosshairs anymore.
Yeah, well, you don't really actually see too many of them. You know, I mean, who is a black civil rights leader now? Al Sharpton?
Right. Well, more of a radio TV personality than anything else. Right. And, or you could make the argument, maybe Ron Paul, if he might end up being kind of a figure, if he's a reformer on the level that he wants to be a reformer, that we would see, you know, maybe some threat around him.
Right. But, you know, also you do see assassinations of political leaders around the world all the time still. And, you know, buying into the octopus theory that this is a global phenomenon, that political power and control is consolidated around the world through assassinations. You don't really, you see it happening all the time, actually, in places other than the United States. And I wouldn't dismiss the idea that it couldn't ever happen again here, either.
Okay. Jack is in Hollywood on Coast to Coast for Ken Thomas, author of JFK and UFO and More. Jack?
Oh, hi, Ian.
Hi.
Hi, Ken. How are you?
Hi, Jack.
Yeah. Sorry. Listen, I have footage of the first shot that hit Kennedy from the other side of the street, of Elm Street. And in this footage, you see Zapruder in the distance shooting the famous video that we've all been brainwashed to look at, you know, where you see him in the side. And there's no shot from the grassy knoll. The first shot that hit Kennedy in the back was meant for the back of his head. The shooter made a mistake, and that shot hit him in the back, in the lower back.
Tell me about the footage that you have, Jack. I want to hear about it. Where do you have this footage?
I have it. I have it. See, it was on it was transferred on the VHS, and I have it on this on DVD.
Why don't we all have it?
Well, I don't know, because they confiscated a lot of videos. A lot of people, people were shooting everywhere, and I heard that they.
How do you happen to have it?
I got it from a friend. Okay,
You got it from a friend. Why don't you send, if your interest is in other people being able to see it and know what you see, why don't you send it to us here at Coast to Coast and we'll put it on the website and no one will be able to confiscate it that way?
Well, that is a thought. Let me think about it. But I think it's very compelling that, and also Zapruder.
I don't want to hear what you describe as on there without seeing it. I mean, I'm not saying I don't believe you, but it seems pointless if you've got it and you won't show it to people. But Ken, what do you want to say?
I want to say that what you're saying there is not actually very controversial. Everybody knows that Kennedy was shot in the back first. That bullet supposedly came from the book depository, according to the Warren Commission, entered his lower back, but exited his throat, somehow went up. That's that way. Fletcher Prouty, a very famous and respected researcher, suggested actually that the throat wound was one of entrance by a flechette dart, and that after that point on the Zapruder film, you see Kennedy with his elbows up, and he's paralyzed with a Karari poison. That sets him up for the shot from the grassy knoll, and that's where you're wrong. There is a grassy knoll shot. Everybody sees it, and it's right there on the film.
Well, excuse me. Zapruder, okay, Abraham Zapruder said in that interview when they're on the news camera, he never mentions anything about a shot to his right. I stood on that spot, and you can turn your head to the right, and the grassy knoll was right there. And he's never mentioned anything about a shot that came to his right. He talked about the footage that he shot, period. So why wouldn't he say that? If that shot was so clear, people were running for cover, okay? That's what you see. But you know, and you see it from the footage that I had, you see people running for cover.
But if you've got that footage, why are you withholding it?
Well, because I think a lot of other people have it. I actually saw some of it on a documentary.
Okay, well, hang on a second. Ken, have you ever seen that footage? Do you know what he's talking about, Ken?
He's when he's saying that people are running for cover, that's not
true. No. He says that other people have seen the footage that he says he has, and it's out there. Of Zapruder making the film while footage.
Yeah, well, when Zapruder actually does walk into a news station, and there's news footage of him, he's saying,
what he's saying in live time.
I was shooting the president. I was shooting the president. It was live.
What I mean is he says he's got film of Zapruder while Zapruder is filming. That's what he says he has.
From another angle
showing Zapruder making, and that's why you can see over Zapruder's right shoulder, he says, and you don't see a shot coming from the grassy knoll. You've never seen that.
Not film. Okay. I mean, there are films of the grassy knoll that actually do show a shooter.
Well,
and the grassy knoll is a bit of a misnomer because it's actually the rail yard behind the grassy knoll. But there's plenty of testimony of people hearing the shot.
I believe you. I'm just saying that. So, Jack, that's what I'm calling you out, Jack, that if you've got it, then you have an obligation to history. You have an obligation to this country to release what you have. And don't come up with any excuses. Don't just if you're not making money off it, which is, laudable, then at least get it into the hands of other people that can disseminate it, put it in the public domain so that everybody can see it and know what you're talking about. I would love to see that. And then we'll have you back on as a guest if you do that. All right, so more coming up. More of your questions and comments for Ken Thomas on Coast to Coast. All right, so heading into the last half hour here of Coast to Coast, we'll grab more from Ken Thomas, your questions and comments on the world of conspiracy in which Ken Thomas lives. He's not a tourist, and he puts a lot of time into getting to the details, such as in the book JFK and UFO, tying together some things that you may never have heard of before. But does it elegantly, and Secret and Suppressed 2, which is also out. You can link up to all those books by going to coasttocoastam.com. While you're there, sign up for Coast Insider, and that means you can listen anytime you want to Coast. You can pull up shows from, well, gosh, even like now, I forget how far back they go. Back to the beginning yet? Coming soon? And then you'll also be involved in some other fun things like the chat we're going to be having a week from this Tuesday. I'll be doing the chat a week from this Tuesday, and I'll wink on you early. There's a big announcement on the way too on Coast to Coast, but we'll leave that there for now and just say more of your calls and questions coming up on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. All right, we got to hustle if we're going to get all these people in for Ken Thomas. Let's start with Ed in Allentown, Pennsylvania on Coast to Coast. Hey, Ed.
Hello, Ian. Hello, Ken.
Hi, you're there. Go ahead.
Hello, good morning. I have a comment and a very important question, if you allow me, please. Dorothy Kilgallen was a nationally very high-profile, highly respected investigative journalist. Her syndicated news column was read like by millions of people each week in America. She appeared on What's My Line each week, the national TV show, game show, and she would ask questions, and like within three questions sometimes, she would sleuth what the person did for a living. Since day one of the JFK assassination, she smelled foul play, and she was subsequently contacted by Jack Ruby himself during his trial, where she was allowed his only interview he ever gave. And then he contacted her and gave her a dossier of all the involvement of all the people who was the octopus of the JFK assassination. She tried to bring this dossier forward and then was killed herself. My question, other than a biography of her life by, like, Lee Israel, who he alleged that Dorothy Kilgallen was killed by the same group of insiders who killed President Kennedy, there hasn't been much else investigated about her. Now, the question being, with so many Hollywood writers and producers who listen to this show each week, I challenge them. I want them to make a suspense film with the truth about the life of Dorothy Kilgallen. Okay. Vis-a-vis the Kennedy assassination. And I say to you, Ken, yourself, I challenge you, please write a book about Dorothy Kilgallen and these events. There are still people alive
okay.
who hold many secrets and who knew her, who well, may be willing to want to talk right now.
That's and fair enough. It's not a question, but so, Ken, do you accept the challenge? Or?
Well, I've actually done a lot of work on Dorothy Kilgallen. The document I referred to before, the Spiriglio document about Marilyn Monroe, that was something that was surfaced by Dorothy Kilgallen. And in fact, she was on What's My Line the very night that she died. And she was sharp, and just as the guy said, sharp, right on the money, figured the guest out that night. And then only a few hours later, she was dead of barbiturate and alcohol combination. And those suspicions about her death are very real. And
was she a known barbiturate user?
I'll join in on the challenge to Hollywood, and I'll also mention too that the detective who got this transcript through Dorothy Kilgallen, Spiriglio, his life story and his connection actually to George Reeves' murder was made into a Hollywood movie called Hollywoodland.
Yeah.
So it's not outside the realm of possibility that maybe someday people will take a closer look at Kilgallen, who also, by the way, was very much into UFOs and reported about UFO sightings.
Was Dorothy Kilgallen a known barbiturate user before her death?
No, not at all.
Okay. So she wasn't a drug addict? She wasn't somebody who had been mixing barbiturates and alcohol frequently?
No. She didn't have those kind of problems.
Wayne is in San Diego on Coast to Coast for Ken Thomas. Wayne?
Yeah, hi, good morning. I've heard a lot of different theories and stuff. I mean, one guy swore up and down that he was in the know, and it was because he was Catholic. And other people blame the mob, or people blame stuff to do with his marriage and everything like that, and, you know, the Secret Service and stuff. But one theory that I've never heard anybody else say before is that he may have shot himself, and maybe Lee Harvey Oswald was trying to shoot the gun out of his hand and shot him by accident. Part of the reason this would be because of problems in his marriage and stress in the workplace, because they had the secret program going on.
Okay, we're gonna let that go right there. But it was Lee Harvey Oswald trying to save him from committing suicide. He just happened to be up with a rifle. Said, "No, we can't let this travesty happen," and so shot him.
Yeah, that's, you know, there is a book. Bonar Menninger wrote a book suggesting that maybe a Secret Service agent trying to shoot back at Oswald accidentally shot Kennedy.
Well, I thought it was a guy I used to know many years ago was a stand-up comic, and he used to do a bit about how his theory was that Governor Connally shot Kennedy because nobody would ever suspect the guy with the sucking chest wound.
Well, one funny line.
I love that.
One it's a very traditional book about the assassination called Death of a President by William Manchester quotes John Connally saying, "Oh my God, they're going to shoot us all after the shooting start." And the subtext of that is, as opposed to the one guy we had set up to be shot.
Right. They're going to shoot us all. Interesting. Hey, Matt, let me grab you real quickly here on a wild card line for Ken Thomas. Go ahead, Matt.
Hi. Forgive me if you've already touched upon this at some point in your broadcast. I joined your show a little bit late this evening. In any case, I was just wondering if Mr. Thomas's research had turned up any connection between Mr. Chrisman and the so-called French Connection, and if so, what that link was.
No, actually, that's a whole different theory. And as far as I can tell, it does not intersect with what Garrison was investigating or anything to do with Chrisman.
This being the hired assassins coming from, what was it? It wasn't France. It was
it was Sicily. It was Sicilian mob.
No, I thought it was, Matt, who was it? Where was the French Connection? What do you mean by that?
It was a gentleman, I don't recall his name off the top of my head.
Corsican.
Yeah,
he was Corsican.
Yeah, it was the Corsican Connection. That's what it was.
Right.
But, I was wondering if there's any validity to that theory, or if it was just effectively a disinformation campaign utilized to kind of skew perspective a bit.
Well, thank you, Matt.
I don't think it's valid, but not all things that aren't valid are disinformation campaigns. It could just be wrong. But
And it could just be another layer, which is kind of the interesting argument that I've always heard, that there were several things going on at once. And that the point was just to get it done, according to those people.
That it would all happen at that one particular moment is a bit of a stretch.
Carrie is in Washington State. First time caller lines for Ken Thomas. Go ahead, Carrie.
Hey, Mr. Thomas, you ever heard of a guy named Aubrey Mayhew?
Robert Mayhew?
Aubrey Mayhew.
Aubrey.
It's not ringing any bells right now. No.
But you'll find this interesting. He used to manage, produce Bobby Helms, the Jingle Bell Rock guy, and Johnny Paycheck. He bought the book Depository after.
Don't say Suppository. That's
it. Yeah, he bought that building after Kennedy was shot. He wanted to turn it into a museum, and the state in Dallas wouldn't let him do it. And he lost everything he had. And but before he left, and I saw it, because I saw him down in Nashville, and he said, "See that crate over there?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "That's the window Kennedy was shot from." He said, "They got the building because they opened." See, when Dallas got a hold of the building, they opened up a museum. And that's what he wanted to do. He said they might have the building, but that window is right over there. He had an upper window taken out, put in the sixth floor, and had a new window put up upstairs.
The sixth floor museum is there in the book depository, and it's one of the funniest things about it is you go to the museum, and it's mostly all cover-up story, Oswald acted alone. But in that one window where Oswald's supposed to be, it's surrounded by plexiglass, And there are boxes set up there. The Sniper's Nest boxes are set up there. I don't even think they claim that they're the original. But there's no image of Oswald. There's not like a mannequin holding a rifle or anything. And researchers all say this is the one true thing about the Sixth Floor Museum is that Oswald's not there. Oswald, of course, was on the second floor sipping a Coke when the assassination took place.
And is Will Ver? I mean, that is one of those weird things that somebody looked at their watch and looked at Oswald. They knew for a fact. They said they maintained to their death that he was there sipping a Coke in the break room.
That's right. Yep. That's what he said, and that's basically what happened.
Let's go to Bill in Eastern Washington on Coast to Coast. For Ken Thomas, we'll get our last couple of calls here for the night. Go ahead, Bill.
Hey, Ken. My question has to do with this entity you call the octopus.
Yeah.
And is if I understand what you're saying is that if any kind of top secret research we do here in America, let's say on our submarine fleet, that is being shared with this all the tentacles of this octopus, is sharing all that information worldwide?
Yeah, well, here's how it works. The Promise software was sold by our intelligence world. Let's call it the CIA, but it's a big alphabet soup. We know that. But we sold it to the Mossad, to Interpol, to the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, and all these people. We sold it illegally, remember, because we're stealing it from the people who made it. But it has a backdoor access so that our intelligence agencies can keep track of the work of the other intelligence agencies secretly.
It's essentially a giant Trojan horse.
Yeah, exactly.
And it allows, we give it, I mean, the claim here, and I think this is a very interesting story, is that as you make it in the book, The Octopus, that we take it from the guys who invented it. We, as a payback, the government then essentially gives the core material to a rival company, which then makes all of the money off of it, but that the government sells it or gives it away to both friends and foes alike without any of them realizing that what they've done is they've essentially opened up an internet access by our government to all of their data.
Yeah, that's pretty much the broad stroke picture.
Yeah. Well, that's fascinating.
And this
lawsuit though, goes on into the within 4 or 5 years ago. Wasn't the lawsuit still going on?
Yeah, I think. Well, InSlaw is still a company, I think, and it still develops software products. But, you know, the Promise software itself was millions of lines of code that was infinitely changeable and did all kinds of things. It tracked Soviet submarines through the Arctic ice. And its extrapolation capacity fills in those pixels that allows us to get all that satellite imagery of the Earth. But
fascinating.
The InSlaw is still out there again. I think they're probably still in the course about it.
Real quickly, David, what was the who's on line two? For some reason, not showing on my screen. Mike in Oklahoma on Coast to Coast for Ken Thomas. Mike?
Morning, Ian. Pleasure. Real quick, in case I lose signal, I want to know if your guest has ever heard anything about the theory that JFK was killed by accident. And the background on that I have is there were 12 reporters in the hospital waiting room when the lead agent for the Secret Service came out to use the payphone because they didn't have cell phones back then, punched in his code on the payphone, went straight to the White House and connected to the Attorney General and said that the quote in 12 different statements was, "Mr. Attorney General, there's been a terrible accident." And I wanted to know if he'd ever heard anything like that. The other piece of evidence to that is that Oswald was trying to get a pardon from the governor of the great state of Texas and was ignored several times, which is the reason why he was up there in the book depository was to assassinate the governor, not the president.
Okay. So that's why it was an accident? He meant to get Connolly?
No, the accident...
No, I understand what you're saying. There was a guy who said that who argued that Kennedy was accidentally shot by a Secret Service guy trying to return fire toward Oswald, and that wasn't obviously that didn't happen. And what you're saying about a guy punching in a code at Parkland, it's at a public phone. That's not likely either because public phones at that time were rotary dial.
Ian in San Luis Obispo on a wild card line on Coast to Coast.
Hi there. I wanted to ask the guest about the theory that, and it sounds like a good theory when you examine the evidence, that the kill shot that got JFK in the front right temple that threw his head back came from the gutter storm drain there, which is basically at the foot of the grassy knoll. And there's also, if you want to call it, an escape route out the back that empties out to the Trinity River about a quarter of a mile or half a mile away from that. So everything was perfect. Nowadays, if you notice, when there's a president speaks or something like that, you know, they seal off all the storm drains, the gutters, the manholes, yeah, the garbage cans. But back then it was wide open, just sitting there. And if you look at the trajectory, then it's a perfect shot. It's exactly how his head went back, and there's an escape route there. So
interesting thought.
Yeah, I've heard that. A lot of people do believe that. I don't really see it happening in the Zapruder film. And you've got those other characters that are sitting right there in the curb, the umbrella man and the radio controller man. And, you know, the shot does definitely hit him in the front right temple. And it does almost look like an upward trajectory. So, I mean, there are reasons to support that. You know, there is a whole theory, too, that the driver turned around and shot Kennedy.
No, I've never heard that. There's no way he did that.
You've never heard that theory before?
I've never heard the theory that the driver, because I mean, all you see is just do you see the driver turn and then he's got a weapon in his hand?
Yes, it's a very famous theory. A guy named Bill Cooper used to champion it all the time. I don't believe it.
There
are reasons to believe it. There are still photographs of an FBI agent picking up a .45 slug on the other side of Elm Street. You know, there's pictures. And that's the idea, was that he would turn around. William Cooper, the driver of the car, turned around and shot him with a .45.
This is William Cooper. This is the guy who died in a dispute with the sheriffs, right? William Cooper?
In Eager, Arizona. He wrote a famous book called Behold a Pale Horse.
Right.
He's a very famous conspiracy writer, right?
Yeah, I know. And he died, too, in a way, sort of after predicting his death, then he said a lot of things and wrote a lot of things and was killed outside of his house, wasn't he, by the sheriff's department?
Right. Yeah, he was a tax resister, and the sheriff set it up to where a bunch of hippies drove up to the front of his house in the truck and kind of goaded him out. And
drinking beer and throwing the cans on his property or something like that to try to get him to come out?
Yeah, and of course he came out with the gun and he shot a deputy, and they fired back and killed him.
Yeah,
And the idea is that they wanted him dead because, you know, he was just a guy in that town, and they could have arrested him any time when he, you know, went out grocery shopping or whatever.
Right.
They had set up this whole thing where he was eventually killed too.
Right. Well, don't let that happen to you. Don't let that happen to you, Ken Thomas.
Thank you for your concern.
Don't fall for the bait. JFK and UFO, military industrial conspiracy and cover up from Maury Island to Dallas on this weekend, where so many people are thinking about the Kennedy assassination. Thank you so much. Enjoyed it greatly. And I hope that people will pick up your books and read through them.
You know, if they go to steamshovelpress.com, they can get the full product line and everything else I'm doing.
Okay. And that Ian, product line, meaning like.
Talking to you tonight. Thank you for having me on.
Do you mean like fanny packs and posters, or what are you talking about, the full product line?
Research.
All your books.
The current book, and like I said, I've got an introduction to a book on the Men in Black. I have a contribution on the Nazi UFO technology thing in Tim Beckley's latest book. Plus, I have a PDF book and a DVD appearance and, you know, all that kind of thing.
I love that. Thank you so much.
.com.
You were a great conversation partner. Have a great night.
Talk again soon.
I think we will. For everybody else out there, drive carefully. Be mindful about bad weather between now and Thanksgiving, so you have a regret-free Thanksgiving coming up, an easy time with the family. Deus te amat, and I do too.